great to be talking to you.
It's good to be talking to you as well and seeing you. Now we've got my camera working.
Yeah, I mean, that's people often ask, like, are you doing anything with the video? I'm like, absolutely not. And it's not because I don't think the video is worth anything. But first of all, I don't tell anyone like, hey, you're going to be on video. So I don't assume like everyone is like, hey, this is how I want to look on video. You know, it's like, you know, with your backgrounds, like, man, actually, your setup is really nice. It looks really nice. But like, also,
this is
like,
my cupboard.
Like, it's too much effort to do video. Like, honestly, like.
The whole good thing about podcasts is you can listen to them when you're doing other stuff. Like, you don't want to have video you have to watch because I, you know, you've got my podcasts have my undivided attention while I'm like folding the laundry, which makes my day much happier.
That's absolutely the pitch for me. That's I listen to podcasts when I was commuting or picking up my children or washing dishes and stuff like that. I didn't want something where there was a visual component I had to keep up with. Like, I have a friend that keeps telling me there's a Netflix show I need to watch or something. And I work from home, so I can have TV on in the background as background noise. But this is something that requires like a lot of attention. And I'm like, I'm just never going to get to this show because it actually requires me to watch it versus, you know, podcasts and stuff like that, where it's more of an audio only and I can engage with it on that level.
I totally agree.
So I've been seeing some of your hand-drawn stuff that you've been doing recently. Actually, I was just checking out your website as well. Tell me more about this, because I know this is not a new phenomenon. I know that there's a lot of people in the space of sort of hand-drawn and even like 3D stuff. Like Amy Sakal, I think, was doing like a Play-Doh thing before. But oftentimes when people think of data, it's something that's sort of digital and flat and remote, right? Like, it's not something that exists in a tangible real world space. What's the deal with like hand-drawn data? Tell me more about this.
So yeah, you're right. This isn't something new. People have been hand-drawing data for a lot longer than they've been using it for computers. I'm using it with computers. But now I think there's a bit more of a swing towards people wanting to make data more experiential, because let's face it, data is an experience. It's a very human experience. It's very emotional. There are lots of studies that show how you interpret information is based a lot on your preconceived, your perceptions, what data you collect, how it's been presented. All of these human elements are there in the data. So this idea that it's almost like a Victorian idea of data is the absolute truth. It isn't. It's a one interpretation of a part of the world that we've decided to measure and then tell people that in a very particular way. So making data less intimidating, more accessible, something making people think it's something that they can be part of or they could understand is really important. And using hand-created elements, or you know, that is called Data Dome Viz. I love that project from a few years ago, using Play-Doh, using unusual formats, data physicalization, data sonification, so stuff you can hear, stuff you can touch and see, and not just see, really helps bring data to a much wider audience, and also helps communicate other things about data. So you might want to be people, unless you're really invested in, you know, right, this is a 13.7% increase month over month, because that's a metric you're really tracking. You probably don't care if it's 13.7 or 13.9. You might just care that it's going up. And that key takeaway message might be better explained using Play-Doh in a way that, you know, if, you know, one way to understand, or for me, using hand-drawn elements, because that it's, if it's hand-drawn, it's inherently less precise in people's minds than, you know, than a two decimal point number. It also makes them seem friendlier, more engaging, a little less cold, a little bit more emotional, and hopefully people can connect with that on a better way. So that's sort of why I really enjoy sort of the hand-drawn, hand-created, handmade aspects of data that help people feel, you know, Tableau's motto, help people see and understand data. I think it should be, you know, help people feel and understand data instead.
I think that's a great point. I was talking with some folks before about how oftentimes even data visualization that's attempting very much to evoke feelings from us, it often fails in ways that, you know, art of various mediums don't. You know, when you look at paintings, paintings are pretty good at creating some form of emotion in you, but oftentimes with data visualization, even when it's topping it, tackling a very serious topic, or when it's tackling something that's supposed to be whimsical or friendly or unifying, even it can be very difficult to use that medium to actually like evoke the same level of feeling that you can get from something that could be slightly more abstract. So I understand like using the physical space, because now you're in the same space, the same physical space as the person that's participating in, you know, interacting with it, versus them looking through the window of a screen onto it. Like screens by their very nature sort of separate. It's the fourth wall, right? Like they talk about theater and movies and stuff. Like there's a fourth wall between us and what we're interacting with. So I think that's really neat. And I also I like the idea that you're talking about how, you know, talking about feeling data and, you know, that level of precision that you might lose in making something that's physical gain something else, and that it's more, you know, interactive and more tangible and real. People have talked before about like line charts, for example, and how curvy line charts are by their nature less accurate than sort of, you know, more rigidly linear based. But on the other hand, people seem to many times respond very strongly when they see them. They feel something more and they want to look at it more. And, you know, many times there's that trade-off between high level of precision and high level of engagement. And, you know, perhaps, you know, there is that getting that additional engagement by having something physical can make people more interested in learning and understanding what the data is saying.
No, precisely. And I think we also have to shy away from the divide in people's minds, which is if it's, you know, squared edges and things like that, then it's serious data. And if it's curved edges, then we're talking about how many red four block yellow bricks, yellow Lego bricks are in a tub. There's an article I saw really recently from the New York Times talking about people of Middle Eastern and North African descent, and how sort of and some of the racial in the US, and how they usually counted in one bucket in sort of US census data, but most don't identify that way. So a really serious topic. In a very serious newspaper, but it used watercolors to draw the bar charts. So it made this topic, which is could be quite charged, and made it, I think, much more approachable, and people might have been more willing to read it and to engage with that reporting piece that they would have if it was just a standard stacked bar chart made in Tableau or Power BI or something like that.
So I think there's something to be said for that. You know, there is in so many different areas of life, sort of an orthodoxy, and the idea that if you stray outside of that, then what you're doing isn't real or isn't serious or isn't authentic or isn't useful. And with data, there's, you know, we have all these charts that everyone sort of, even lay people that may not know how to read them, everyone knows what a line chart is or a pie chart is and that sort of thing. And then if you used a different way to represent that same thing, that, you know, oh, you're doing this with Plato, like it's not serious or it's not meaningful. It's like, well, people looked at it. And if people looked at it, they can glean the meaning from it just as well as they could if it were made in, you know, Power BI or Excel or Tableau or what have you.
No, and you were right when you said if, you know, people like looking at, you know, certain types of charts. And ultimately, if your point is to communicate information, then surely the chart that people look at is more effective than the one and they remember and they engage, which is more effective than the one that they don't bother to look at, they scroll past, don't engage with, and they don't remember.
Yeah, and I think sometimes creating something memorable, it's really that balance. And I think, you know, particularly with hand-drawn stuff, like Georgia Lupi was a guest a few episodes back.
Yeah,
and
I heard hers.
Yeah, and like the whole reason I even reached out to her, which was intimidating for me to do in the first place, is because she had done, yeah, it's uncomfortable to say like, hey, you're Georgia Lupi. I'm not. And I saw your piece that you did on your long COVID and how you use like paint dabs to represent the different symptoms. And that is not a typical way to represent data. It's not a serious way to represent data. but it was a very effective way to represent data because the message that I took from it when I looked at it was, holy cow, there's a whole lot of days where she suffered symptoms and a whole lot of different symptoms. And often there was no rhyme or reason. There wasn't a lot of a pattern. It was just all over the place. And for me, as someone that I don't think I've even had COVID once, but I certainly am not suffering from long COVID. When I looked at that, I understood, oh, wow. So for her and what she's been feeling like physically and maybe mentally and emotionally ever since having this, it's a whole lot. Like it's an avalanche of bad days. And that wasn't accurate. Like it's not numerically accurate. I couldn't look at it and tell you immediately how many days there were, or you know what the trend was. There wasn't all these little helpers that you would get from sort of a more sort of rigorous and technical data analysis. But that wasn't the point. The point was to illustrate, look at the variety, look at the frequency, look at the sheer volume of, you know, symptomatic days.
I absolutely love that piece of hers, and she's one of my I just like you, a massive fan of hers. And I first one of the things that really drew me into data visual, like the data visualization is more than just dashboards, was I followed in 2014 her and Stephanie Posvick's Dear Data cards as they posted them on Twitter sort of week by week as I went through. And my eyes were, sparkling. Wow, you can do this? And that was sort of a big sort of a eye-opening moment for me. And I was like, this is what I like. So I've been sort of slowly working towards that and seeing what I can do ever since. And currently, I'm at building these live hand-drawn sketches, which is a pretty niche take on sketch noting.
So I saw a handful of these. I know you've done Priya Padam, you've done Tristan. I think you did Andy Cotgrove as well. Explain what these are and like what the thought behind it is. What's the process? Like, let's get into it.
Yeah, so they're a little crazy in a good way. It's okay. I have an alarm going about now. She's like, remember, you got to go get your kids like in the near future. And I've turned the alarm off, so it won't start ringing. I love sketch notes, like live sketch noting. I think the performative side of it is really engaging, and especially now with AI when creative content's getting easier, and there's like this mass homogenization of things. Live experiences, you can't generate those through AI. Like they are there and they happen, and you're there, and it has a real impact. But I wanted to capture sketch noting. Live sketch noting traditionally captures what people are saying. Let's say a conference, a meeting, an event. And it sort of captures what they're talking about, and some images are used to help emphasize those and for shorthand for longer conversations. But what they don't capture usually is everything else that's going on around what somebody's saying. So where are people clapping? How much are they clapping? If it's a virtual meeting, are they throwing up emojis, reactions? Are they putting in comments? What are they commenting? When are they commenting? Is the speaker going through slides at a rapid pace and they're really high energy, or are they much more chilled and relaxed? So an example of this might have been Shirley Wu's keynote from Outlier talk last year. She had a really peaceful, a very powerful talk of her personal story, but it was a very steady build up and pace of her presentation. Compare that to, let's say, if Matt Francis, if you've seen one of his presentations where he goes through 500 slides in 3 minutes or something, it's a really different experience. So what I'm doing is trying to capture some of those quantifiable and qualitative elements of a talk and get them down as they're happening live. So it's sketch noting, but instead of getting what people are saying, I'm capturing some of the other things that are going around, the atmosphere, the mood, the vibe. So anything from, claps and reactions to, I created one a week or two ago for the first Women on Snowflake user group. And they had a key speaker, Veronica, and I was capturing minute by minute. She was telling a story about her career. What part of a story arc was she on? Was she telling a challenge, the action she took to overcome that challenge, the outcome? Was this a professional story or a personal story? So I was sort of capturing minute by minute, what did that look like, and to see if there was any pattern. And for her, no, she mixed up personal and professional all the way through. So yeah, that's what I do, which is a lot of prep work, and then a bit like studying for an exam, and then it's all on, and it's go, 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 go. And it's not precise. And I'm only measuring things I can count. There's no standard deviations happening here, no Z scores. My mental math, unbelievably, could not manage anything that complicated. So it's live in the moment. And as soon as a talk's finished, I finish. And then it's something that could be shared with the attendees, just like sketch noting. This is what we've just been through. And it's people find them really engaging. It makes the event feel extra special. It's a bit different, something you'll definitely remember. And afterwards, I've had people mention that, they're like, oh, that I saw that. I was at that talk, that user group. For instance, the one you mentioned, which was the analytics user group in September last year, 2023. And it's a memory jogger. It's a, it's like that really cool band t-shirt from that concert you went to, or as embarrassing as it is, those like old tabloid conference lanyards with the cool badges I collect, you collect. I think I might even had some from you guys in the Heartstarter Love podcast.
Oh yeah. I got some.
It's sort of like that, a good memory jogger, great to share on social, but in the moment it makes people feel, special, and it's a bit different, really engage with it.
So in terms of making those, like you were saying, there's prep in advance and there's stuff that's going down live. So in terms, like, what's the differentiation? Like, what kind of prep do you put in advance, and what are the components that you're sort of, I mean, in many ways, it's like you're building a parachute on the way down, right? So what kind of preparation goes into doing one of these? And then what are you actually doing live?
So yeah, a lot of prep. So I thought about this week, and I reckon I probably do, for me, at least it feels like it's about 45, if I break into three, I'll break it into three sections. So there is the planning. So this is requirements gathering. The planning, the preps are getting everything ready to go for it to be live. And then the live drawing bit. And I would say I spend about 45% of my time on the planning. So that's gathering requirements, gathering inspiration, building a mood board, figuring out, reading what the event is. Like, is it on Zoom? Is it hybrid? What features do they have enabled? Is it in person? And then brainstorming all the fields and things I could capture that would be meaningful for that talk, given the speakers and given the format. And then I go sort of put all that down, and I brainstorm how this could begin to look. And then I create a mood board from bits of inspiration from everything from illustrators, children's books, random things I've seen on TV. And then I give myself a break, and then it's about 50% is the planning. So this is building it out. I use Procreate on my iPad, which is a drawing app. And I figure out the layout. At the moment, I've got sort of a style which has a person, a photo or an illustration of the person, and the data's then incorporated in and around them, just because this, I want people to be able to identify, like recognize who's talking. Figure out what that layout's going to look like. figure out where the data is going to be. I've got to draw my axes and my grids. Like, what's, you know, what range do I think will they be? Like, sometimes it's just like one or many, or other times I might be like, well, actually, I think they're going to say 70% of this and 60% of this. So I need an axis that goes from 1 to 100. Then I create the sort of background, make it nice. I did some for the Information is Beautiful Awards Day of Inspiration. So that was sort of pulling on, so the background for that, I wanted it to match the look and feel of the speaker profiles they were putting out online beforehand. Build the how to read key, and then make a backup set of, like, because I've got I've had some really good bloopers. So I have, so this all planned. I've got everything planned out. I then decide what brushes I'm going to use. I make sure my presets are there. They usually jump in between 1 or 2 brushes, 1 or 2 colors, 1 or 2 layers. I've got all my shortcuts on my Apple Pencil and on Procreate, so I can tap and jump between 1 or 2 layers really quickly and change colors and change brushes. I've got a few tips to organize all of my brushes and colors so they're all in easy to find places, and I use the graph emoji beside each thing for a live drawing, so I know this brush and this color palette is just, you know, if everything goes wrong, I can just look for that graph emoji. It's really easy. And then I need to make a backup set of encodings, because I've dialed in for a few events, hybrid ones, where I assumed I could see the screen, what the speaker was talking about. But the camera for the hybrid event was actually focused on the speaker. And not so I could hear what the speaker was saying, but I could not see that screen. So ideas of maybe how many slides are they using, or what's the main color of their slides? Are they busy, or, you know, things I might have looked at that way. Couldn't do that at all. So I had to like pivot and use my backup encodings, which is looking at things about the speaker. And so there's a little bit of holy, like, oh my God, this is all messed up on the fly. They've started talking. And then 5% drawing. And I'll show you for drawing, I just have a setup, and then I have a really high tech piece of kit here. I've got my kitchen timer. So as soon as I start talking, I click my digital, it's not analog, but it has a button that goes beep. So I click that to start it, and then I can see when they start talking, and that's sort of my time zero. And I draw, 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 draw. And they finish.
How did you come up with this? Okay, I'm feeling stressed out. And I'm feeling stressed out because I'm like, oh my goodness, there's so many moving parts here. I'm thinking, were I to attempt this right now with our conversation, I'm like, I would definitely mess up. Like, my fear would be live tech demos are hard enough. And within a live tech demo, at least you like sort of know where it's going. This, you don't necessarily know where it's going.
I love that though. I love that I can't be expected to be perfect. It's inherently, it is not going to be perfect. And I find that really liberating. I've done lots of demos. When I was at the Tableau Public team, we used to do trainings all the time, used to do weekly webinars. And I've had a few big mess ups in those. And I find that more stressful. Genius ones where, you know, you're typing in a calculation and you don't see, you've like forgotten to close the parentheses or something like that, and you know you'll fix it up and you know it'll be fine, but the idea is it needs to be perfect to work. This doesn't need to be perfect to work, so there is a bit of wild panic though if you have to pivot last minute. But where did I start doing it? In high school, I had a really pedantic English teacher called Mr. Melnick. I was went to my high school and had Mr. Melnick. He was very pedantic. He was a very good English teacher, and I learned a lot from him. But I didn't particularly love his classes at the time. But one thing he made us do, for our sort of exams and stuff, we had to do a poetry comprehension and reading comprehensions and essays and stuff like that. And he really drilled in structure, because he said, you might, who knows what piece of poetry you'll get or essay you'll get. He's like, they all have a structure. So when you're stuck, you can analyze the structures. And he taught us to, over the top of all the poems we had to do, you had to draw iambic, da, 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 and flicks and ticks and flicks and ticks and double lines for pauses and breaks, and there's a visual thing of it. And by doing that, you actually got a pretty good idea of the structure of the poem and then how that impacted things. Same with essays, how they're laid out. It's beat this, thesis, aim, linking paragraph, and then you could you so I sort of I then just kept on doing that with lots of things, just annotating the structure of things. And yeah, even at home when I sort of write, writing like shopping lists. Actually, I hardly ever write shopping lists anymore because you do it all on your phone. But I tally things up a lot, and so I think I just use that, like these sort of little visual shorthands as I'm going along a lot. So for me, it doesn't seem as intimidating. So I guess it's my way of like understanding information I'm being given. It's just sort of figure out structures within it, and I do that with little dots and ticks and dots and crosses and loopy lines and things like that.
Because what you're describing, like in terms of your live sort of hand-drawn visualization, it's sort of somewhere between like shorthand that like journalists would use back in the day, and also like court reporting, where someone is like there's the courtroom artist who's recreating the scene, and it's sort of their interpretation of it, and it might be slightly heightened or altered or something. So it's really interesting. Like this is like a totally new idea to me. Like doing it live and sort of creating it as it's happening. And it's really unique. And I think like while hand-drawn stuff, it's like it's been around since the dawn of time. Like this is an interesting take on it that I know I'm not super familiar with, and I bet a lot of other people aren't as well. And I like how you're sort of taking your own personal, like not just concept of how to do it, but habits that you've always had, and finding a way to incorporate those and communicate things to other people.
Yeah, it's pretty fun. And I think everyone has their flies their own free flag and has their own quirks about how they understand and how they do things. So it's yeah, you're right. This is I never really thought about it that way. This is probably one of mine.
I think it's really liberating, like you were saying, to put yourself out there. So this is something that you didn't know how people were going to respond to it. It is a little unorthodox and it's a little quirky, and there's a whole lot of like you personally in it and how you're choosing to do it. And by putting it out there and seeing who really responds to it and stuff, it's a really great way to not only sort of expand your own skill set by practicing something that maybe you previously did by yourself, or you didn't show a lot of people. By exposing it to other people, you're sort of synthesizing their like emotional feedback as well as how they're, implementing it. But you're also sort of growing that base of people that like, oh wow, these people really understand what I'm making and really understand where I'm coming from.
Yeah, it's definitely been spending my Brave chips,
Yeah.
putting you sort of have you've got your stash of ones, and yeah, I've got Brave coins. Heard that actually on another podcast recently. But yeah, spending my Brave coins, putting this out there a bit. But it is really good. I find it fun. I also find I pay a lot more attention to what people like what the presentation's about. So selfishly, if it's something I'm interested in listening to, it's a great way to sort of make sure I pay attention. I'm sure you, even with best intentions, with you're at a conference or you're watching something on Netflix, like your phone, if it's there, you've got to really like put it away. Otherwise, sometimes you see your hand creeps and you're like, oh, I should just check. I'm like, why am I doing that? It's like I'm watching this thing here with this person. So it makes you just focus, makes me focus 100% on what the like whatever that is, what the person's saying or who's commenting what are those comments. It sort of makes me in the moment, which I find pretty exciting. And get a bit of a rush from it the same way you do when I'm not sure if you're do you ski or something? If not, when you're like at the top of a ski run, you're like, right, well, I gotta get down. And you're like, okay, let's go. So it's sort of that bit of bravado. Is bravado maybe isn't the right word, but that little push over the edge, you're like,
Yeah.
okay, and we're doing it. And then you can't stop because the presentation isn't stopping. So it's I quite enjoy that.
The hardest
Maybe
part
that's a bit
is like
weird.
officially committing to the moment and starting. It's the tension building up to it that's scarier. You're making me think back. I remember when I was like in grade school and middle school and stuff, and I always had the habit of, while I was taking notes, also drawing at the same time. And it was, a lot of people found this to, they would be like, "You're distracted. Like, why are you doing this?" And I'm like, "I don't know. This is just part of my process." And it seems that apparently that's fairly common with ADHD, which I've never been diagnosed with, but I also haven't been checked for. Some people would say that it's stimming, but I think for me, like thinking visually and thinking about multiple things at once helped me understand the thing I was thinking about. And in some ways, I can see how, you with your own process and your own method of creating visuals while you're working, like while you've been doing this traditionally with your pedantic English teacher or a literature teacher, was it? For you, do you have English in England? Like we have English in America, but it's actually literature.
Yeah.
I'm very confused by this.
So I this is finishing high school in Switzerland of all random places. And yeah, it was English, but yeah, it was literature, I guess. So not learning English, it was essays and books and yeah, literature is probably a better way to describe
Yeah,
it.
that's the thing. Like in America, we actually have English, but it's first when you're younger, it's the language, and then later it's
Yeah.
literature, but it's just called English the entire way
It's just called
through.
English the whole way through.
Yeah.
Actually, I'm not sure about you, but I grew up in the age of when I never really learned punctuation or parts of grammar. We took the very whole word approach, which is not what the science says is the best way to learn. I've got small kids. I'm all over this right now. But yeah, it was all went from like spelling bees, which I was atrocious at, through to novel comprehension and things like that. But yeah, it's probably all part of that. And also, you said you doodle, and I'm sure lots of people do. But I think we're also I read a listened to a podcast on just like a podcast and newsletter like problem. I like them too much, and I listen to lots of them. Put them into like a text reader as well. But this one was saying that how you move your hands when you talk is part of comprehension for you. And they ask people to give directions to shops or somewhere like that. And one group of people could give them normally and move your hands, you turn left and go down here. And the other group of people had to sit on their hands. And that the second group of people sitting on their hands, they found it much harder to give directions, and they gave much poorer and less understandable directions. So I think that doodling in the side is brain, hand, body, it's all there, whatever works for you. But yeah, I sometimes just like tapping at your keys. People might click their pens and tap their feet at the same time, but yeah.
An
Gotta.
interesting visual that you could have made from this conversation right now, and I'm now way moving one of my hands emphatically, is you could actually make one of how each of us have been moving our hands during this. So you've been moving your hands quite a bit to make points and for emphasis and things like that. For the most part, my hands have been fairly stable, except for times I've reached over to mute my phone or to keep something from turning off and things like that. So it's interesting how the between our two communication styles right now, like I have my elbows kind of planted on my armrests and I keep still because I've done this enough times that I know if my hands are too animated, I'm going to hit my boom mic and then I'm going to have strange noises I'm going to need to edit out. And for you with your headset, you have a lot more freedom to sort of move more naturally.
True, true, but I don't have a pop guard or anything, so you might have to do more audio editing afterwards. And that's a really good point. This would be a great way to visualize. And then the back of my head, I'm saying, well, how do I know you're not moving your hands more? You're just moving them below where the camera's cut. Yeah, camera's cut. Maybe it'd be shoulder wiggles I'd be looking for instead.
What you can't tell is I do have an under-desk elliptical, and my feet are sort of just like rocking back and forth casually as like a nervous tick right now. So that's my
Got
motion right now. My arms are stable, my legs are swaying on the elliptical.
Now I just have an image in my head of Roadrunner, Looney Tunes, yeah, running off the edge of a cliff, and no, sorry, Wile E. Coyote running off, and then like legs going, and then yeah, everything else is still, and then they drop.
But yeah, it's interesting. Like your concept of visualizing things live, like that's, I mean, I think there's lots of ways to record stuff now, like digitally, but doing it analog is, it's much more holistic. And while it may not capture every single nuance and gesture, that's not the point necessarily. It's the point is to capture the broad strokes of things and to be more emotionally, evocative and in a way authentic, like because raw numbers can be impersonal. I think that's one of the challenges of data visualization, particularly when we're dealing with difficult topics, that it can be very cold and impersonal.
I know exactly. And it also is performative. It's, yeah, the human aspect of it as well. And innately it's personal to each talk. It's different. Things I'm measuring are different. How I display them is different. So it's all specifically aimed to each talk, which is again, yeah, human and personal, which is pretty, I think it's pretty cool.
So if anyone was interested in learning more about your process or seeing your work, or maybe even beginning to do this themselves, is there anything you would direct them towards, like learning more, exploring the curiosity, or getting started?
Yes, and I'm not going to be able to give a very good answer to this one.
That's okay.
I would say if anyone is interested, please feel free to reach out to me, find me on LinkedIn. I will soon get a website up properly. But if you are interested in starting this yourself, I would suggest you don't need anything more than pen and paper or your finger on your phone. I'm using even the Note app. They have got the pen. It doesn't, and don't worry about it looking terrible. This is just for you to start with. So it doesn't matter if you can't draw particularly well. I know that's a blocker for lots of people. I've got, as I've said a few times, I've got small kids, and my youngest is under two and loves drawing. And he's like big. Yeah, of course, nobody's going to see this because of the podcast. I'm waving my hands about wildly here, pretending I'm a small child with a pen on a very large piece of paper on an easel. He just makes big marks and little marks and dots and lines, and he doesn't care that it looks weird or rubbish or anything like that. He just enjoys doing it. But we very soon lose that pleasure, and we begin to self, is this crap? This is crap. Oh, there are so many people who are better than me. So it's really hard to squash that voice. So I think practicing, the best way to practice would be to make you do self do it in real time. So it doesn't have to be live. You could be watching a TED talk or your favorite Netflix show. Pick something you're gonna measure how many times a character talks, when they talk, how many times. Anyway, it doesn't really matter. But make yourself, as soon as that finishes, you stop. You don't get to go back. You don't get to edit yourself. If you miss a bit, you miss a bit. Because I think that self-censoring is probably one of the biggest blockers for people to try to start to do anything like this. So the probably the hardest discipline is getting started, and then when it's finished, being fine to put it out, even if it could be better, or if you made a mistake, or something like that. But and so yeah, that's where I'd say start. Just try doing this yourself on a piece of paper. It doesn't have to also take very long. I've recently done two sort of icebreakers, using some quick drawing. One was a making a data batch drawing with a pen on a sticky note for at an event, and it was you drew one on one side. You drew one sort of swirly shape, which was, is this the first time you attended this or is it not? And then you another shape was a circle, which could be an eye, and that's the fourth thing. That was what you did in data, and then your mouth was too sort of smiley or smiley, but with like lips. And that was ask me a particular icebreaker question. And it took a whole of like 2 minutes to do with pens on sticky labels on people's knees at an event. So there's no chance that any of these were going to look amazing and using really basic symbols. But I think all those limitations mean that you get into it and you are quite creative and just give it a try. I also, as you know, everyone says, working within these limitations of it's going to be live, I've got to, it makes you quite creative with what you do. So sort of shoving all these limitations on yourself, and a limitation is how much time you can take to do it, is really helpful. So yeah, that's a really long-winded answer. So if you're interested, reach out to me if you want to chat about any of this. Also, if you'd like me to do one for one of your events, shameless self-plug there, I'd really like to do that. But if you'd like to try doing something like this yourself, I'd say fly your freak flag, whatever weird, crazy thing you like to count or do or visualize or how you see the world, try doing it. You can never quieten that voice in your head that says this was terrible and everyone will think it's terrible and therefore I am terrible. You're not terrible, it is not terrible, and nobody will probably think it's terrible, and if they do, they're not the people you want to be talking to anyway. But give yourself some limitations. And I think the biggest limitation for me is I'm doing this is live. So just try doing it live. And as soon as it finishes, put it down and just look at some like 3 minute TED Talks or some good ones just to start on YouTube.
I think that is probably the best way to wrap this up. And with the idea of limitations, in a way, can really free you up to be creative and to take chances. Take each opportunity as a learning exercise. Don't worry about it being perfect. Like, enjoy the moment, make your thing, be done with it, and then make something else. Each time you do it, you're going to learn something new. You're going to get better. You're going to refine your process. And you're probably going to be more satisfied by feeling free and not that everything has to be perfect all the time.
That's a brilliant summary of what I just said. So thank you so much. It's been lovely talking to you.
It's been wonderful talking to you. I look forward to talking again soon, and I look forward to seeing more of your work and hopefully more of this from other folks as well.